Today on Seculo, a bombshell, FEMA's anti-Trump relief effort uncovered.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, so the election is over. Let's get back to business about filling the cabinet, getting ready for January 20th. Of course, this period of time in between the presidential election where you have President-elect Trump and, of course, the outgoing administration. We have called it before in the past sometimes the most dangerous time in the United States of America, especially for those newly elected candidates that like to shake up Washington, D.C. If you saw the vote totals out of Washington, D.C., I mean, the bureaucracy was out in full force. There were less than 20,000 votes for the Republican ticket in the entire Washington, D.C., in the city. All of the rest of the votes, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands, went to the Harris campaign. So you know you are walking into entities, departments, and headquarters full of people who do not share your vision, and even past that, may like to undermine you. So you've got to set it down very early that if you were going to undermine and not carry out the job or try and delay the orders of the president or secretary because you don't like their policy, then you need to be shown the door and you need to quit. And we need that reform done in the legislation. But right away, we are already seeing wrongs that must be righted. For instance, I'm sure you've heard about it, but we're going to look into it deeper now, how the House Oversight Committee is now calling, and that's controlled by Republicans still, on the FEMA director to testify after those. I mean, it's almost so unbelievable. You're like, is this really true in the United States of America post a disaster, a natural disaster, that someone would actually put inside the do's and don'ts, the good practices of those who were going door to door to check on people to make sure they had the resources that they need to not engage one-on-one or personally with anyone who has pro-Trump signage in their yard? I mean, that would have been my house. That would have been probably a lot of our houses, especially that time of year. So, I mean, we put it up on the screen for you right now. Avoid homes advertising Trump. So if you had a bumper sticker, if your car did survive that storm sitting out there, if you had a yard sign still surviving the storm, something that identified you is don't bother those people. And, Will, that means if you don't knock on their door, guess what they don't get? The resources that you have available to provide for them so that their family gets through what was a time where people didn't have power. Of course, the resources were low, water, food, and they were willing to deny the basics to fellow Americans because of who they told via free speech they were likely going to be voting for.
That's right. And we know that the Biden-Harris administration had been targeting conservatives for 4 years, whether that be the FBI or any of the other federal agencies, the Department of Justice, that were specifically going after conservatives. But here, in a time of crisis, you see an employee that was instructing those under her leadership to avoid homes advertising Trump. And even some of the surveys that they would turn in of, like, they put the address, what they did, they have to fill out their reports. There were many that had Trump sign, no contact per leadership. So it wasn't just something that was directed and then ignored. The employees that were going to make sure that victims of a natural disaster had the resources afforded to them by the federal government, they were being overlooked and rejected and discriminated against because of political affiliation. That should never happen in the United States of America. It's a big reason why Harris lost, is because of the bureaucracy doing things like this. And this may be a first for the Biden administration. They actually fired the person. Yeah. How many of these other bureaucrats that have been discriminating against conservatives still have their jobs today?
Right. Well, we know that the left has been reeling from the election. After they reel, what do? They get ready to go to war. And there are reports that the Biden-Harris deep state is working already to undermine the voice and the vote of the American people. We have to fight back. That's what our 2024 Faith and Freedom Drive is built for. The coming days before the inauguration are going to see unprecedented attacks against President Trump. Support our work today. Donate to the Faith and Freedom Drive. Your gift will be doubled. Donate today at aclj.org. Let's be ready for battle. to Secchio. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And of course, again, we are waiting to see how the balance of power will exactly turn out in the races that have not been called. But we are looking right now, it looks like a Senate with 53 Republicans, and will right now the House still on track, but it's going to be very close, but on track to get to the majority.
That's right. So as of right now, what we're seeing is that depending on which source you look at, because Associated Press has called some that other news organizations right. that call their own races have not. But we're looking at the Republicans officially having anywhere from 214 to 216. So either four or two away from the majority, depending on which news organization you are taking the called races from. Now, there are still plenty where Republicans lead but have not yet been called. The Alaska race, where the Republican is up by 10,000 votes, still not called. There's a few others that are similar to that. A few in California, where it's tens of thousands of votes that the Republican is ahead, but yet the race has still not been called. We will see these hopefully be called soon. And that should get the Republicans over the majority. And with that mandate, then also the House can start making plans for investigations into things in the Biden administration. Leadership. I know we'll talk about in the next segment that one of those members of leadership may be joining the Trump team. That is if that majority gets reached. There's a lot to still shake out where you still have to keep that majority. And right now, I would say we're probably on track to about 220, which would be a not extremely comfortable lead, but enough for the time that we're in. And we will hopefully see that and know that within the coming days so that we can start moving on.
Right. I mean, so you look at FEMA, that's really the Department of Homeland Security. So whoever is nominated for that position knows that there needs to be a reckoning inside FEMA, specifically with those who go on the ground. And along with the investigation that's being done by Florida Governor DeSantis in the state of Florida, and the now announced investigation in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill. Listen, this should be done if it was people were told that they shouldn't go into a house with a Harris Waltz sign or any other political statement. We are all Americans. This was a disaster, and political signage should have been the last thing on their list. People didn't have water. They were trying to locate people to see if they were alive, their children's needs, and to provide that so that they knew what that person may need, or if that person was still in the home, or if they could somehow locate them and know that they were alive. And yet, for political purposes, they would just go past homes that were not, that were unmarked, that were marked in a incorrect or politically incorrect way for the FEMA regional supervisors. And they put this out as if, again, it'd be dangerous to offer assistance to someone in need because of their politics. And this, again, it goes to that bigger picture of the bureaucracy that this president is inheriting yet again. And we know, as we've said, listen, we have 18 current lawsuits against that bureaucracy and the Biden-Harris deep state. 18 of them at the ACLJ ongoing. Some of those will not be mooted out just because Donald Trump becomes president, because these take a long time to work through, even after you get a nominee finally confirmed and you get their top aides finally confirmed. Getting these bad actors out, we don't have the legislation yet that makes it very easy. So you've really got to prove some, in here, kind of serious bad action, almost bordering or right on almost illegality. So dereliction of duty plus is like what I like to call it, leaking classified information, but not necessarily leaking unclassified information. That doesn't necessarily get them fired. It's all wrong. It needs to be reformed, but we also have to be prepared and help prepare the new administration for those shortfalls so that we don't have a Jim Comey 2.0. I mean, I think we can play it for everybody right now. Remember, Jim Comey said the entire Crossfire hurricane, which led to the appointment of Mueller, got us involved with President Trump, and then to the first impeachment trial of President Trump. It all started in the first couple of days of the Trump White House. Don't take it from me. Take it from disgraced FBI, former FBI Director Jim Comey.
You look at this White House now, and it's hard to imagine two FBI agents ending up in the same room. How did that happen?
I sent them. Something I probably wouldn't have done or maybe gotten away with in a more organized investigation, a more organized administration. The FBI wanted to send agents into the White House itself to interview a senior official. You would work through the White House counsel, and there'd be discussions and approvals and who would be there. And I thought, it's early enough, let's just send a couple guys over.
So, I mean, there you go. We cannot let that happen again. And how do you not let that happen again? You got to make sure before you take, you know, on January 20th, before you're taking the oath of office, you know exactly who is there at the White House ready to go and that knows. You don't have to let FBI agents walk right in. You can say, who do you have an appointment with? Oh, you're not on our appointment book. You can then go to the White House counsel or other advisors and say, listen, these guys just showed up. No, you got to call us. You got to make an appointment. Is there some national emergency issue? You know, we'll assist you in getting you to the right person, but we've been here. We are just getting started here. You know the rules. We know the rules. So get out of here and call us back, because you have to be. And that's not just for FBI. Anyone who starts showing like that up from law enforcement. I know it sounds bad that you have to think that way as an incoming president, but we learned. President Trump learned. And to make sure anybody who gets a cabinet level position understands that as well. Don't just let them walk into the building. We also have to get their teams confirmed much quicker. And that's part of right now our Faith and Freedom Drive, because we also know that there are going to be major efforts to slow down the Trump nominees. It might not be all of them, but the more they can do. Imagine this. Ben Carson said, you know, he got confirmed. He did not have his staff in place for 5 months because of the confirmation process. So for 5 months, you become a sitting duck for the bureaucracy, who can spend those 5 months trying to ruin you, leak stories about you, characterize who you are, demonize you, and of course, not carry out any of your actual policy directives that ultimately you and the president have signed off on. This is the major concern now, and I wanted to give people time to celebrate and to kind of breathe. But if we want to see success, major success in these next 4 years, we have to all be ready to fight together. We have to keep this unified front that got through the election unified on so many of these issues when the knives come out. And they will come out in Capitol Hill, and they will come out through the bureaucracy. So support the work of the ACLJ. This is how we kind of prepare for this incoming time and really to kick off the year, which is before President Trump takes the oath of office. We need your financial support. We have our Faith and Freedom Drive, where your gift is doubled, so you double the impact. Any donation, $10 becomes $20, $25 is like donating $50, because we stay in this fight, whether it's nominees we need to get behind and support during their confirmation battles, whether it's battling through the deep state until the day President Trump takes office, and even continuing some of those battles to make it better for that incoming team. We will be there doing that work. So donate today at aclj.org. Make sure we're ready to go, that we are ready to go on January 1, and you know that we're prepared today as well to fight any way we need to. And we've still talked to others who are in races that haven't been called. I'm not going to name all of those yet, but know that we are looking into that work as well, which of course takes resources and takes time before the actual inauguration and the new Congress is sworn in. So a lot to do at the ACLJ. We do need your support. Contribute. We don't ask for this directly so often, especially so early after an election, but you know, we went through a lot going through with the election integrity programs that we set up for all of you to be able to utilize, and you did. Now we need to get ready for the next battle, which is getting this team in place to Washington, D.C. and their other offices, making sure they get confirmed, and making sure that the same mistakes are not made once again, and this administration is able to kick off and stay on track. Will, that is the goal of this entire drive, and I think a focus of the ACLJ is, let's get to make America great again, to get Washington back on track again. Remember, we have to be ready to fight for every step we take that the administrative state will try to oppose.
That's right. And we know what happened in the first 4 years. We saw what the bureaucracy tried to do, how they tried to undermine the president's agenda at every step, and how they continued that into the Biden-Harris administration, ramping up their efforts to crack down and target conservatives, whether you're a conservative Christian that is going to church, whether you are pro-life and supporting pregnancy resource centers. It didn't matter. The deep state was coming after you. We have to make sure that stops. The right people have to be in that can clean house, and the Senate needs to do their job quickly and effectively to get these people confirmed and their deputies confirmed so the work can begin. We cannot wait 6 months.
Donate today at aclj.org and double your impact. So you may have seen yesterday, one of our very good friends here at the ACLJ, one of my very good friends, my wife's very good friends, Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, who has been a leader in the House of Representatives, first from New York's 21st District and working on turning more and more New York congressional seats red, where she's had great success in doing that, moving up to congressional leadership at her age, at a time when I think, again, you kind of look at Washington as kind of older and a little bit out of step. Not the case, especially in the House of Representatives, when you check out that leadership team. She's been an awesome voice against anti-Semitism here in the United States and a pro-Israel voice, as you'll see the excitement from folks like Ambassador Danny Danone, a good friend of ours who is Israel's ambassador to the United Nations, that the U.S. and that Israel will have a true ally in the ambassador to the United States, to the U.N. from the United States, in Elise Stefanik. She is from a very red district in New York, so there isn't that concern there that even though it's New York, that it would upset the congressional majority, and I think she's going to do an excellent job. A little bit more about her, because you might see her as maybe just an elected official. I know her from the political world as well, but she was also a director of communications for the Foreign Policy Initiative, which was launched by Defending Defense, which was a coalition of think tanks warning of different kinds of dangers to the Department of Defense. She's done debate prep for people that were vice presidential nominees, as well as working in the Domestic Policy Council staff and the Chief of Staff's office, assisting and overseeing all economic and domestic policy issues. So not just, again, coming from the political world as an operative, but also inside the executive branch. Even right as away, she was elected the youngest woman ever to serve in Congress in history. She's right now a senior member of the Armed Services Committee, the Committee on Education and the Workforce, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, so she's into that, up into that world, and the Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government. She came to prominence a couple of times. The first time, I actually have a picture of Elise, and when we were defending President Trump in the first impeachment trial, and she really took on Adam Schiff, who will now be a senator. Fun, but he'll be in the minority in the Republican-controlled Senate, which we'll know about leadership there sometime midweek this week. She took him on and during the hearings and said, "What? So I'm not allowed to speak because I'm a woman?" And that again shifted that hearing directly. And then when we had all of these professors and heads of presidents of these Ivy League schools come and testify, of which she's a graduate of some of them, she took them and really led to the removal of many of these top-level leaders. Let's just kind of remind people and imagine her doing this. I can't wait to see it at the United Nations.
I will ask you one more time. Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
Anti-Semitic rhetoric. Anti-Semitic rhetoric when it crosses into conduct that amounts to bullying, harassment, intimidation, that is actionable conduct, and we do take action.
So the answer is yes, that calling for the genocide of Jews violates Harvard Code of Conduct, correct?
Again, it depends on the context.
It does not depend on the context. The answer is yes, and this is why you should resign. These are unacceptable answers across the board.
Okay. That was the first person who resigned. That was from Harvard, and where at least I know is an alumni. And so, again, this idea that you could call for the annihilation of Jews and that alone would just be protected rhetoric, which, by the way, even under the Supreme Court, which broadly defends, as we do, free speech to the limits, when you start calling for someone to be eliminated, that is a call for violence, death. It's just like saying, I want to kill someone. That kind of speech, if it's directed at specific individuals, is certainly not the speech that is protected under the First Amendment, and context does not really come into play unless you're talking about it being some dramatized play that you're watching, something that's not real. But if it's reality, you can take action on that. And the reason we know that, that person at Harvard, no longer in that leadership position. So if you can take on these gigantic institutions, these Ivy League schools, I think Elise is going to have no problem taking on developing world countries and even some of the bigger countries who aren't used to women that can slice and dice them in their arguments and also look them right in the eye and tell them why they're wrong, why they're evil, and why they are damaging and to the world, and just telling the truth. I mean, honestly. And so I think that was a great move. And for this whole move against, you know, Donald Trump doesn't like women, the first two major appointments he makes, chief of staff and ambassador to the United Nations, are women. He also did announce Tom Homan right. would be there. And what is that exact role?
It's actually a border czar.
So he's going to be like a White House advisor.
Right. So it wouldn't be a position that needs to be confirmed through the Senate. But he's taking over Kamala Harris's old role as border czar.
I don't think she's got a big notebook for him ready to go. Like, here's all the great things I did. Here you go, Tom.
Fortunately, I think he already has that notebook ready to go.
I don't think he'd want to use her notebook.
He will also be overseeing kind of the strategy as far as in empowering the agencies to begin that deportation measure for the criminal aliens that are here. He obviously has a long career in Homeland Security and Border Patrol. I think it's a really good pick for the job, just like Congresswoman Stefanik, who, when you see that, those videos of and clips of her taking on the Ivy League presidents, the Ivy League presidents is kind of like the internal United Nations of America. Yep. They are the worst of the worst when it comes to anti-Semitism. They fester it on their college campuses. They allow it to grow uncontrolled. Right. And that's exactly what the UN does on a global stage. When she gets there, it is going to be so refreshing to see her addressing General Assembly, any sort of general debate, because she is not going to hold back. She's not going to do the niceties allowing these countries to get away with the vile rhetoric and things they put forward. We know that the UN condemns Israel more than any other nation in the world. So it is time to have leadership at the UN that can combat that and say, hey, if we're going to be a part of this body, we are going to come in here and shut this down. Yeah. And I'm excited to see what Congresswoman Stefanik can do when she gets there.
Exactly right. And this is what we are going to need your support, and you're going to have to support these individuals. You know, I think there will be confirmations that will be quick, and there won't be a ton of opposition to. They'll get asked some tough questions, they'll move on. And there'll be some that they're going to choose to have fights over, the Democrats, just to see if they can dirty people up, rough them up, or even prevent their nomination. So none of this is a done deal until you get confirmed by the U.S. Senate. As we go through, and if we say, you know, hey, this is a friend, this is someone we want to work towards getting to that position, listen, we're going to need your support as well. So be ready for that when that battle begins. And of course, the entire process here is getting to that battle. I think this week we're going to learn more and more, maybe sometimes even during the show, about other individuals that are being brought into the Trump administration. We'll continue to report on that as well, and let you know about those that we have relationships with. We won't necessarily with all of them, because depending on the issues they handle. But let me encourage you to do this. Support the work of the ACLJ, because one thing we are very good at is taking on this deep state. 18 active lawsuits ongoing now. Those will continue to make it better for this new Trump team. We're also good with the nomination battles. We've been fighting those out in the Senate for decades. And so support our work there. Let's prepare for the next round of battle. We won the election. Now we've got a win in Washington, D.C. Donate today, ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
On this Veterans Day, too, let us just say thank you to all of those of you with family members who are veterans, for veterans who are listening to this broadcast right now, for those of you who have worn the uniform. We appreciate so much your work. That is why so much of our work is dedicated to making sure, especially on the policy side, when we talk about getting into the government, putting good people in place that will, again, not put our men and women in harm's way unless it is absolutely necessary for the interests of our country and our allies around the world, and that we can question decision making from the past or current administration as a new administration readies itself. And again, though, it's a day for all Americans. I don't care what political stripe you come from or background or how involved you are in politics. We have to honor our and remember our veterans. It's important to teach your children about it. It's important that you remind yourself as well that they are always being deployed, even in smaller ways that we don't even know about sometimes, and that they are always ready to go to risk their lives to defend the freedom and liberty so that we can have these transfers of power and talk about through these issues. And I think we are on a path towards expanding free speech in a good way and getting rid of these, you know, these boards of dis and misinformation boards that are going to determine, you know, who should be able to speak and who should not be able to speak. And you're starting to already see huge world shakeups just because the election. I mean, remember, President Trump is not even in office until January 20th. And let's just see, 72 hours after winning, the first female chief of staff in history is appointed. Now, New York City is going to stop giving debit cards to illegal immigrants. U.S. companies are already announcing that they are bringing more production home. The stock market has hit all-time highs. Even Bitcoin is coming back and hitting all-time highs just because of a president who is more open to the idea of those kind of currencies being more utilizable and I think more mainline, streamlined in the world. In Mexico, the newest migrant caravan was broken up by Mexico. Qatar agrees to evict the remaining Hamas leaders that they were sheltering and told them to get out. Hamas wants a, quote, immediate end to war. The Taliban claims to, quote, want a new chapter. China wants, quote, peaceful coexistence. That doesn't sound like invading Taiwan, does it? Russia is, quote, ready to speak with the U.S. Interesting. That seems like they are ready to start looking at exit ramps from Ukraine, which would be a good thing there. The EU wants to buy U.S. gas, not Russian gas. Of course, we have to have U.S. gas on the market, and we will under the Trump administration. And then Ukraine leaders have already been in talks with President Trump, with Elon Musk. This is still just in the first 72 hours, and President-elect Trump has got, you know, another 70-ish days to get ready to take office. And we're already seeing moves by that around the world. That is exciting. How do you build on that? How do you take those moves that people saying they're willing to do this, they are looking at doing this, they're planning to do this? You go in strong. And we know President Trump is going to go in strong. But what we learned from the first administration from President Trump is that everybody on the team has got to understand, one, that the knives are out in Washington, and they're looking at a clock. It's a four-year clock. And in some clocks, it's a two-year clock. So in 2 years, they want to make sure you don't have the congressional majorities in at least one house or the House or the Senate. Both would be great for them too, right? Make your life really hard. And then they look at the four-year clock and say, you know what? We just have to survive, do enough that makes all of their policies and ideas slow down. We'll scare their people from even wanting to take these positions. We'll try to make the nomination periods really slow. We have to demand to get people confirmed, and their staff level folks who got to get confirmation, they need to get confirmed. And these are the battles that we need to be ready to engage in. We can't just confirm a cabinet secretary and have them sitting there with a bunch of bureaucrats for half the year. They've got to have their team in place ready to go. So support the work of the ACLJ, our government affairs team, ACLJ Action, ACLJ. We are ready to do all of this work. We need your financial support. Donate today at ACLJ.org. Double your impact. Let's start this off on a strong footing, folks. Unraveling on late Thursday evening and then into Friday, and we wanted to see how everything would shake out with these horrendous attacks on Jews and Israelis in Amsterdam in Western Europe following a sanctioned UEFA League soccer match between a Israeli team, Maccabi Tel Aviv, which is probably their best soccer team and most known worldwide in those international tournaments, versus the best team in the Netherlands at the club level, which is Ajax, which is in Amsterdam. And so this was a sanctioned match for a tournament. And instead of, you know, maybe increasing security, considering Israel is right now involved in a conflict that is considered extremely, you know, divisive, especially in the West and Western Europe, and even here in the United States to an extent, unfortunately. We saw the protest. But Western Europe, which has had a very different population shift, we saw something that we have not seen happen on European streets since the days of the Nazis and things like Kristallnacht and those kind of historical notes that led to the horrors of the Holocaust. And that was many individuals in Amsterdam and in Holland and the Netherlands who were coordinating for what we now know a period of time to attack Jews and Israelis in the streets both before and after the soccer match. And Logan, I mean, I think to all of us, and we travel, we've already begun, you know, getting back to Europe and working with the ECLJ. They're looking at what they can do as well, since these are a lot of institutions that are connected. These leagues are very connected to the government there, and they're kind of our pseudo-governments because they oversee more than just a country's league. They see an entire half the world's leagues, and yet they didn't put in extra security, it doesn't look like, knowing that this was even just looking at, you know, just basics, that should be necessary. And instead you end up with, at one point in time, there were missing Israelis, missing Jews, being beaten on the street. Sure. Over 60 people, thankfully, have been arrested, and it didn't continue for days. But it got to a point where they sent El Al planes to pick people up, to get them out of Amsterdam quickly, because they didn't want to have to go through the regular airport process even, or have to stay an extra hour.
Yeah, it was absolutely horrifying to watch. And I'm very connected to, I guess you'd say, the Zionist internet, where things seem to break there hours before they make any sort of mainstream news. And we start to see this bubble up. And
on people's phones.
On people's phones. They started showing videos. Texts were coming through. And you have to be kind of cautious, because sometimes videos get spread that aren't real, and all of a sudden it became very clear that not only were these real, but it was happening not just in one spot, that it was happening all over the area, and that this was well organized. And then text messages started to come out, and screenshots started to show up where you saw the messages that were getting spread. And this, of course, is in Amsterdam, where it's already, you said, tensions are high. You have an Israeli team coming in. Look, if you had an Israeli team coming into America right now, you'd assume that you'd have extra security. You know, most synagogues in America right now have extra security because of everything that's happened over the last few years. Now, I will say, I was in New York over the weekend in New York City, and it is very different feeling already. I was in the area. There's obviously predominantly religious Jewish people. Everyone very happy, very outspoken. Of course, what you're seeing right now is there was the only thing political I saw on the streets was a pro-Trump parade with trucks, with a skeleton driving a car. They were playing Trump won and you know it. The General Lee was at the end, from the Dukes of Hazzard. It was a very joyous thing, and people were stopping and taking videos and goofing. And what I can learn is also two things. One, New Yorkers treat things very differently. I didn't hear anyone talking about it, but I honestly felt in the air a sense of relief of maybe something's going to get better for that city.
Yeah.
That you'd have some changes happening.
Because Donald Trump has a big interest in the
city. And maybe they may not have voted for him, certainly, but they maybe could feel a relief. Because right now, New York is sort of on the precipice of change, and you'd hope it goes one way and things get better. But when you have the news coming out of Amsterdam, it did even make me worried about going to New York, because you saw the night of the election, the only protest that happened really the night of the election was a pro-Palestinian march that happened on Times Square. That was really the only thing we've even heard about. I mean, a little bit in Chicago, there were pockets of things, but the big one was a anti-Semitic march in Times Square on the night of the election. Other than that, it feels like it's been pretty quiet, and I think because there's a lot of people who see what's happening in Europe, see what's happening all over the world, and go, you know what? I may not have supported Donald Trump. I may not have voted for him, but maybe there's a glimmer of hope and a sigh of relief that maybe these cities can get themselves under control. They don't want to see their targets closed. You know how many buildings I saw for sale in New York? It was so sad.
Yeah.
They want to see their cities turn around. They don't want to see them become where people are getting hunted in the streets, where you are, whether that is from, by the way, extreme issues with the homeless crisis that's happening there, or obviously all the political issues that have happened.
Right. I mean, I think, again, when you see this attack on Jews, it is time now for a new administration with new representatives of that administration to go to the world and say, you know, this is not acceptable. Again, they were able to stop this and prevent this from continuing. But I mean, the fact that it was happening in a first world country, knows that it has this match, knows that it might be somewhat controversial, and yet they move along with it, and had no idea that so many of these taxi cab drivers were utilizing technology to block the streets, to make it difficult for people to leave, to even pick people up and put them into harm's way. I mean, just the worst of stories you can imagine by utilizing those rideshare services. For those companies, it's important for them to start speaking out about how they can prevent this in the future, so that you can have faith that if, you know, that you call for a ride and you know it's the right, you know, they give you the information to check to make sure it's the right person picking you up, that you're going to be as safe as you can be in any car ride, and that you're going to be dropped off your location, and you're not going to be taken to be beaten because of your religious or your national background, your religious background, or your race. And this is unacceptable around the world, but it's why we're sending people like Elise Stefanik to the United Nations. It's to make sure that these issues don't just disappear and get shoved under the rug after, you know, 48 hours and everyone moves on. I think where we are as a country, that the left is still wiping the tears. They're not going to do that for very long, though, Will, and they're going to come back. Their next job is, how do we undermine President Trump? So the popular vote thing, that's not going to work, obviously. So now they're going to look towards others. They don't have control of the Senate, so they can only slow down the nominations to a point. And I think what we have to see from Republican senators is a push as fast as possible to get people into place, because President Trump cannot get any of his issues and his main policies actually being enforced and starting to be enacted without getting the right people in place. This bureaucracy is the same bureaucracy that was there when he was president the first time, and they are going to be there to try and thwart you until you can remove them. We need legislation on that. I mean, there's a lot of work to do, but we've got to get to day one, and let's make sure that on day two, we haven't been set up by the FBI or some other law enforcement agency that will then hover over and cloud over, be a cloud over this entire next 4 years. We can't have that happen. We need good people in these positions who are able to carry out their jobs. They just need to know to be, I think, Logan, I mean, it is my first message to everyone, which is, you don't talk to anyone you don't know. You don't let them into meetings if you don't know who they are. Just because it sounds like they're FBI and they're acting nice, if they don't have scheduled meetings and a reason to be there, you're not meeting with them.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be very careful. You got to be very careful. Everything that's happening right now, I think that you cannot be, you can't be more safe to follow what's going on. And look, in all the lines of work that we do, you got to stay vigilant. You got to make sure that the people are
walking into the lion's den. Yeah. There. I mean, in Washington, D.C., if you're nominated for one of these positions, or New York City at the UN, the people that are first surrounding you, and they'll clap when you come in, they are the lion's den, literally.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the scary part about this, is when you look at it, like I said, on the streets of New York, it feels very different than probably what's going on, you know, in the courts, what's going on in the government. That's a different situation. The streets of New York feel great. Feels like people are excited. People feels like there's some hope again. But if you probably do the same thing in Washington, D.C., it probably has a good feeling. But you got to make sure you are really careful and staying vigilant of what's happening, because you know that there's a large portion of this country right now, and not just politically, look, or not just in politics, even regular people. I don't see it as much as I thought I would, but I have seen people say, I'm no longer friends with my family. I'm no longer going to talk to them.
We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, of course. It's a lot of drama right now. It's a lot of grieving for some people.
A lot of kids doing that too. A lot of these first-time voters who think you know your person's automatically going to win, and they get involved and they get heavily involved in politics. They've never been involved before. They don't realize that you lose more than you win.
Obviously. Yeah. That's a pendulum that swings pretty regularly.
Yep. The violence issue is not what I'm saying here too either. This is about not being able to get your government functioning. Not because President Trump isn't ready to do it and the people he's putting in place aren't ready to do it, but because they don't have enough of a support team that can push back against the bad bureaucratic actors that will first try to slow everything down, first try to tell you, no, I don't think we can do it. I think we got to have another meeting on this. We may need to bring in some people from this agency or this department, and then you're not able to carry out the functions of the government that you're being instructed to by the president of the United States. And that is why we want to be very strong with our presence in Washington, D.C., which we are, but we want to take it to another level so that all of this, we get the best of the best out of these 4 years. So support our work. Donate to the ACLJ during our Faith and Freedom Drive. Double the impact of your donation today at ACLJ.org. Make that donation. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. If you want to be part of today's show, that is the number you call, 1-800-684-3110. Will, let's do it.
Let's go to Ronald calling in South Carolina on line two. Ronald, you're on Seculo.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, one thing I loved about the Trump administration, his first administration, was that he literally gave the White House to the people. His first term, he gave the White House to the people. And when Biden got in there, it was literally no disclosure, no transparency. And you had those press secretaries just kind of putting a spin on everything that came out there. Yep. And now Trump's back in there. And so you just pray that now everything will be open so that we can all see the truth. And it kind of reminds me of what Rick said during Biden's administration, and that was now more than ever, you know, ACLJ, but I'm saying that slogan should never actually get old, because as you were just talking, we need ACLJ to literally fight for those that Trump's going to need to be with him in the office.
Yeah, I think, listen, the one thing about President Trump that was very different from President Biden, and it's different than really any presidents that we've had before. Some of that's because of modern technology, is that he leans in on communicating directly, Logan, to the people. That, and he will make a change now, whereas it used to be, you know, during the campaign, it was more politically focused. Yeah. Now he'll use it to communicate to the whole country and the world. And so you don't have to just rely on whoever becomes press secretary to get your info. In fact, oftentimes they are just kind of taking a remark on X and kind of extrapolating that, what does that mean that's going to be happening?
It's a question of whether we see a shift in the way it was. And we got to go back to the first Trump administration. Remember, I mean, he would be out there every couple of days doing hours of press. I don't know if that's going to shift this time around.
I think there'll be plenty of times where you'll get a lot of info.
What is also interesting is a lot of his campaign promises are just now sort of showing up on different platforms. And a lot of that was because Rumble was really the only one that allowed him to post for so long. So people are posting a lot of content thinking it was new content, but really it's new to them because they haven't seen it because it's been throttled. Now you're going to be able to see it a lot more. There's going to be a lot more action. And of course, compared to the Biden administration, I'm sure you're going to see the president a whole lot more.
You know, I'm also seeing a lot, Jordan, of people, especially on the right, saying maybe it's time to just end the press briefings, the daily press briefings from a press secretary. Yes, press secretary there to field questions and things. But at the same time, I mean, I love to watch them because they are entertaining.
We've kind of made them into a show. Yeah.
But we saw how irrelevant the mainstream media has become throughout this campaign season. And when you give them on-camera briefings, it just gives people an opportunity to try to make a viral moment for themselves. It's not really about getting information for the people. Reporter. It's the reporter trying to get their screen time, 15 minutes of fame. And that happens during the Karine Jean-Pierre press conferences as well. You see many people trying to do that. Have we gotten to a point where, yes, if the president wants to come out and do a specific briefing or a head of a department doing a specific briefing, but do we really need the daily on-camera press briefings? It's rewarding a press for bad behavior.
I think the reason why there was so much attention on President Biden's press briefings is because he was so out of
it. Yeah, you didn't see him. I think
and so they had to like prove to you that he was still governing.
I think there's a good chance. I think they should continue. I actually enjoy them, and I think they're necessary. But remember, though, during the Trump administration, it wasn't just mainstream media allowed in that room. There was a lot of the alternative media were allowed, including ones that were very controversial. But he would call on them and talk to them. It wasn't just that. And now we've seen the impact of podcasts and what they can do.
So
now I think
this.
You have to look at it and go, okay, who actually is allowed in that room? And maybe it's just different people to ask different real questions, not just gotcha moments coming from the four big ones.
Right. And who are just trying to get their something they can play to lead up to an interview or something they can play throughout the day to say, well, our reporter got this, 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 and this. I think, again, all of that's going to be important. We don't know who that person's going to be yet. I think when we know who that person's going to be and who is going to be the head of the communications department, which oversees that. But listen, this is going to be a president who is not camera shy at all. He might rethink ways he did it before in the past.
Yeah.
But I think to prove a point early to show the contrast, he's going to be willing to talk directly to the American people as much as he can, and that's still the best way to talk to them is so they can look you in the eye kind of thing.
Yeah, we'll see if we get Jim Acosta back in that room, mixing it up.
I don't think Jim Acosta's going to get back to that room.
We'll see. It'd be kind of fun.
Was he banned?
I think they had some issue. I don't know if he ever was banned. Him and Spicer and McEnany, they would spar. Man, that was entertaining television, I have to say. Like, I'm kind of looking forward to some of that again. You want to take this other call?
Yeah, let's go ahead and go to
Not
Don.
Not just Green Jean-Pierre lying about Joe Biden being feisty, and he's running a marathon right now. He can't be with us.
Let's go ahead and take Don from California on line one. Don, you're on Seculo.
Oh, great day in America. God bless you all. You know, we have a big problem here in California, as I'm sure you well know. Yeah. Governor Newsom and Attorney General Bonta are pledging to fight Mr. Trump tooth and nail like the sewer rats they are. And not to put too fine a point on it, but what I can't understand is they're fighting on illegal immigration. Well, that's their sanctuary laws are in direct defiance, I believe, of federal law. Yep. They won't even cooperate with ICE. That's in direct violation. So I can't understand why we can't do something about it. If not, why not?
Well, I mean, you can work around them now. I mean, the federal government is in charge of the border, not the states. And so they can't prevent you from going in and carrying out their function of the federal government. One thing we fought for before, especially under Democrat administrations, is for states to be able to take on a role. But the Supreme Court's been fairly clear that there's very little the states can do without the federal government asking them to do it. But the federal government can go in and do that. It is their job to secure the border. It is their job to handle immigration. But listen, I mean, we've also made more allies at that level with a state attorney generals. One of our good friends, the ACLJ alumni, who is attorney general-elect in West Virginia, so that when these states are fighting back, we will have states that will fight for the goals of the administration. And of course, the ACLJ will be there. A lot of these arguments will be the same arguments they have tried to make in court. Much of it is about delaying policy. It is not actually about stopping the policy. They just want to see how many delays they can put in place. Courts have heard a lot of these issues before. So again, I think if we are vigilant, if we are ready to fight, not just to win the election, that is over, but to win on the issues so that they can be implemented, that we can get things done in a huge way. And we could still look back on that first four years of President Trump, getting done more than those 4 years and a lot of presidents do in eight. Well, now we've got another four. So where can we take the country in those fours? How much ahead of the bad can we get out of this current mindset that just is so gloomy? And I think that's why people are so hopeful right now. And let's keep the smile. Let's be happy warriors through this process and let the other side be the ones, you know, who are screaming and crying and shouting on TV and in their social media. We just need to keep the fight alive. We need to be realistic. I need all of you to be realistic about what your leaders can accomplish and can't accomplish when we actually figure out what the margins are going to be in the House, the exact margin in the Senate, and what President Trump can do on his own and what President Trump will need legislation for. So we have to also be wary of, again, just being able to do everything in one day. It doesn't happen like that. And you have to prepare to fight. But again, it's a fight worth fighting for because you are protecting America for the future, really saving a lot of America for the future as well. Support the work of the ACLJ. We're ready to go, but we want to have those resources to be ready to go in 2025 as well, to hit the ground running. Support the work. Donate today. Matching challenge. Double the impact of your donation. Donate today. ACLJ.org.